videos. Just make it simple.
On this episode of Drive with Woody Fit, me and Megan and Michael sat down and we really caught up. Because it's been like 2 weeks, guys.
We had no plan whatsoever.
We literally did not plan this episode out at all.
But we knocked the ball out of the park, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, whatever she said.
Don't pat your back on the don't pat yourself on the back too much.
Don't do that. Don't do this thing.
Whatever. It's funny. Listen to the episode to hear that part. We also talk a little bit about nutrition in this episode, carb cycling. We talk about body image. And then I kind of talk about my shoulder issue a little bit.
Squats.
Michael brings up different ways to do squats.
That movement with your legs.
But anyway, without further ado, let's get into this episode of Drive with Woody Fit.
Press play.
I didn't hear anything because I was upstairs taking care of kids.
Yelling. How are the kids doing?
Pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty quiet.
They're kids, and like the weirdest thing to experience is when Shane can sense that Nikki's pregnant.
Really?
Yeah. So he'll just like, it's so weird because if he's not like getting the attention that he wants, or like kind of like, it's a weird phenomenon, but like they can sense that the mom is pregnant. And they'll just start acting out.
It's like a dog.
That's so weird.
It is the weirdest thing. And so we've been having, I don't want to say we've been having trouble with him, but like he just gets in this funk every time they come home and just only wants Nikki to hold him. That's the only thing he wants. So like she can't even cook dinner without him like standing next to her crying.
Did Gianna go through that?
No.
It was a little bit different. I mean,
it was different because there were so many other people.
Yeah, she was already like 2 years old.
By the time Nikki was pregnant.
When Nikki was pregnant, yeah. Shane's like just going on 1.5.
So she was more
dependent. Yeah, she was a little more independent. Yeah, she was a little more independent. So she could kind of like figure out her own stuff and
do her own thing. Think that would help with that? I think a dog would help with that.
I agree with you, but it's just not the right time.
I think any time is a good time to get a dog.
No, because think about it. Both of them are out of the house super early.
Exactly.
Both of them are not home.
And a guardian dog here.
No, because listen, Michael, to what you're trying to say. You're trying to have this dog cooped up in a house for 8 to 10 hours a day with no physical interaction with a human being.
Mm-hmm.
How horrible is that? They can't do that. They cannot physically do that.
All right, hear me out. Two dogs.
Even then, there's still no physical human interaction.
They don't need humans. What do you think they did before us?
Okay, but how are they going to pee? They're not going to pee in the house. They're not going to poop in the house.
It's called a dog door.
No.
A mat, a pad.
No, listen. So the other thing with it, like, not only are we gone for the majority of the day, but my evenings, pretty much every week, for every day, I'm tied up doing something. So like, Tuesdays and Thursdays are my heaviest training days in terms of clients. They're the days that I have the most clients in the evenings. Every night, every Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have the most clients. So it's, I'm busy. I'm busy Tuesdays and Thursdays
in
the evenings.
So Nikki has to take care of the
kids. So Nikki does a lot for me so that I can be training clients. And, I have to get my own workout in as well. So Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays are the nights that I fit my workout in, you know. And it would be a little different if I wasn't training to, you know, break a deadlift world record because it would just, I may not be doing my workouts in the evenings, but because I'm training for that, I have to optimize the time that I work out, and I have to do it at a time that I feel that I'm performing at my best, which is in the evenings as soon as I come home from work.
Mm-hmm.
So I get home from work and I train, and that's what I have to do that. And if I don't do it right when I get home from work, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It won't happen that night. So if I were just working out to, for whatever any other reason, you know,
recreational
purposes. Right, like, but when it comes to strength, I cannot lift heavy in the mornings, So if I wasn't focusing on strength, that would be an option for me personally to just lift in the mornings before I go to work. But because I'm focusing on strength and doing something that, like, realistically does not make sense for my size nor my frame, it doesn't make sense for somebody who's 5'7 and competes in the 148 weight class to deadlift 540 pounds. Like, there's no functional reason for me to be able to pull 540.
Why do you think, I'm going to backtrack here, why do you think you can't lift as heavy in the morning versus at night?
I think part of it is mentality, and the other part of it is just timing. So, like, if I were to lift in the mornings, I would need time for myself to wake up, for me to drink my coffee and be fully awake. So I would need at least, you know, a half an hour of not relaxing, but, like, light movement, basically. Like, I'd either go for a walk or walk on the treadmill or just walk around the house and do something while I drink my coffee and wake up, okay? Then after that, I could potentially start my workout after 30 minutes. So we have an hour for a workout. So we're already at an hour and a half in the morning, and all I've accomplished is my workout, okay? Then we have, let's say, 15 minutes for me to shower and change, and then... in, you know, so we're at an hour and 45 minutes and I'm finally leaving the house. Okay. With the time that I want to be at work is between 6 and 6:30 in the morning. So that means I'd have to be getting up at like 3:30 in the morning to be working out.
Yeah, already then, alert, no.
Right. Then let's backtrack. Let's rewind that a little bit more to the time that I have to go to sleep then, which would then
be like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock.
Not, it would, I would have to be in bed
right now.
Right. Like, I would have to be wrapping up my night at like 8 o'clock. Okay. And it's just not feasible for me right now because I got to put the kids to bed. And then, you know, if I have, I got to help her, I have to help her, but I don't put the kids to bed, but I help her get the kids ready for bed and put them to bed. And then I have to spend time working on making content for the podcast, you know, researching content for the podcast, figuring out what the content for next week's videos is going to be for the Facebook page, the day-to-day stuff for my clients, that the attention that they need every day. And so all of that stuff adds up to too much to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in theory, could I go into work later and work later in the evening? Yeah, I could, but it would just take some adjusting, right? And the amount of time I would need to fully adjust to that is I would have to, and I'm already in a routine at this point. So, and I'm in a routine and I'm super close to this next meet. We're like 2.5 weeks out at this point.
Whoop, whoop.
So there's no point in me trying to change up my routine, at least at this point, you know? And so maybe potentially after this meet, if, you know, if I don't have anything on the plate, any other meet that I have my eye on for at least another 6 months, yeah, it might be worth, you know, trying a new routine like that. But it would take some time for me to get used to that and adapted to it. So that's the biggest reason. And you know, it's just not only is it my mentality, but the amount of time that I would need to be fully awake, fully ready to dig to that point emotionally and mentally to where I can lift heavy in the morning. And it's just...
it's an interesting concept, I wonder, because I used to work out in the morning, maybe a year ago, before school, but I had, time wasn't an issue. Like,
right.
I purposefully woke up early to work out, and I had plenty of time to shower and, you know, eat breakfast before going to school, mm-hmm. but, like, now I don't really have time to do that. My schedule's just changed, so it'd be interesting to see, but going back to, it'd be interesting to see where, how... now, me physically, what I'm lifting, if I'd be able to do it in the morning versus at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon.
And I mean, ideally, like, if you were just beginning, if I was like just beginning, like, let's say I fell off the boat, you know, side hustle got crazy busy, work was crazy busy, and I just didn't have time for myself. If I fell off the boat like that, then I definitely would not even think twice about working out in the morning, because, or even if somebody's listening who's a beginner, right, and they're like considering, you know, you're in the contemplation phase, you're considering working out, maybe you work out every now and then, but you want to get more regular with it, do it in the morning, because statistically speaking, you're more likely to stick with your workouts if you bang it out first thing. It's the first thing you do that day. Mm-hmm. You are more likely just to be consistent and stick with it. Because
and
as
your energy levels are raised, your metabolism or levels are raised as well throughout the day. So it jump starts your day.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, the physical benefits, but as the day goes on, things come up and it gives you an excuse to say, oh, I can't fit it in today because this, that, and the other thing came up. But if that's the first thing on your schedule is do this workout 3 or 4 times a week, mm-hmm. you're like 100% more likely to do it than if you just wait till the end of the day.
Yeah.
Now, somebody like me, like us, we're set in our ways this is a part
time.
Of our life.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter what time because we know we're going to do it, right?
Yeah.
And more often than not, if something comes up, we still make time to do it.
I think it depends on the time still for me.
Why?
Like morning versus evening.
Just because the gym is packed. For you, it's not. But for me and Meg, like there's times where we get there and we're like, oh, crap, I can't do that part of the exercise.
My motivation goes.
Right.
Not
right.
My motivation. I just like get angry then. And I'm just like, oh, screw
right,
this.
Because you can't do what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally see that, and it makes sense to me, like, and I was there, like, you know, it's only been coming up on 2 years that I've solely been training at home.
Lucky.
Yeah, dude, and no, honestly, it's been amazing, it really has been amazing, and I was talking to one of my other clients about this, just the mentality about it, because I know that I thrive on, I know what will cause me to release adrenaline. And of course, when you're talking about powerlifting and lifting maximal strength, that plays a major role in, how much you can lift. So for me to be in a garage and let me backtrack here. What really sparks my adrenaline is knowing people are watching, right? When I know somebody's watching me and people are expecting me to pull this or watching me and thinking to themselves, I wonder if he's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me that extra. I know that's what stimulates adrenaline because, I mean, number one, you can feel it. If you like, you can feel an adrenaline rush and it's amazing.
It feels amazing.
It's so amazing. And so, so knowing that I train in an environment that lacks that stimulus. Okay. So, and I just posted today on my personal, on Facebook and my personal Instagram that, you know, when it comes to training in a garage gym, you have to be the athlete, you have to be the trainer, and you have to be the hype man, all in one. So, like, you need to figure out ways to hype yourself up. And one thing that really helps me hype myself up before a lift is yelling. So, like, I will frequently just yell out of the blue. And right before I go do a lift. And like generally it's lifts where I'm like not sure if I'm going to hit that certain amount of reps. You know, if I know I can do it, like I did a 6x8 today at 255. And that's been pretty consistent for the past couple weeks at 255. Just the way that my program has been scheduled and put together. So, you know, I didn't really need to dig super deep to do that because today was supposed to be a moderate intensity day anyway. But, I mean, Monday sucked for me, so it ended up being... That's why I threw in that 315 AMRAP on deadlifts.
That looked fun.
It was crazy. But that's why I just threw in an extra set on deadlifts and did an AMRAP at 315 to see what I could do. Because Monday's intensity was just shit, and it was supposed to be really fucking high intensity. And I just had an off day. And I think I talked about it in the last episode that I posted. I did a solo episode last night. It had to be last night. It had to be last night or Monday that I recorded the solo episode. I think it was Monday because it probably went posted last night. But, you know, I totally lost my train of thought there. But anyway, training in the garage gym, lacking the environment that I know stimulates my adrenaline, has been beneficial for me because then when I'm put in that environment where my adrenaline is stimulated, and I get that like
your body's
mental,
like, oh shit.
Yeah, like I'm in a totally
I
different
wanted
mental
this
state.
For years.
Yes. Totally different mental state. And it just I put 30 pounds on my deadlift. You know, I mean I think
like
part of that was also the program.
On the podcast
but
before.
What?
Adrenaline.
I don't think so.
We
haven't really got into it. Have you guys ever been able to give yourselves an adrenaline rush just thinking about something mentally?
Yeah.
Does like getting really mad count? Does that count?
No, because
then, no, that's channeling a different emotion.
No, yeah. I've never had. I don't think I've ever had like a.
You know, you'll know it if it happens to you. You'll know.
You will
it.
Know.
I've had it in exactly. soccer. I've had it in soccer.
So something,
but
that,
not weightlifting.
And I think that it's. I think no. that
that's. I say soccer is different because you have spectators watching. You have mm-hmm. your whole team watching.
Yeah,
you have
that's
your coach
when I got
watching,
it.
Like, versus weightlifting, like. You don't know if anyone is actually watching.
Right. Or if you catch somebody watching, then you know somebody's watching.
Yeah.
But even still, happen. Sometimes just knowing people are around you is enough to like think like, oh, like maybe they're watching. Like maybe I should push this one. But something that for me that like stimulates adrenaline just mentally is like thinking or watching not fight videos, but like there's this page on Facebook that I follow. And they post, like, cop body cam videos or, like, security cam videos of somebody, like, getting robbed. And, like, a lot of times the videos that they post is either, like, you know, the guy who is getting robbed defends himself from the attacker and wins. Or, like, they post it as a lesson of, like, you need to be prepared all the time. And the guy that, like, is getting robbed ends up, like, getting beat up or whatever. You know what I mean?
Oh, shit.
Or, like, dies. And, like, some of this shit is really, like, fucking graphic. Not graphic, but, like oh, shit, that dude just died. Like, I just watched a video of a guy die, right? So, like, seeing that and watching that, it's fairly easy for me to, like, put myself in that person's shoes. And, like, just watching a video like that, I'll be like, fuck. I'll be, like, taking a poop, watching a video on Facebook. And then, like, I get this adrenaline rush while I'm on the toilet.
Like, this is so awesome.
No, like, it's crazy. And so, like, you can, like, control your mind, I guess we could say, doing that. And it's really, like, an amazing feeling. Like, but I try not to do it a lot, especially, like, coming up to a meet. I try to avoid watching those videos because it's, like, not that, like, you could get like adrenaline fatigue, which is a real thing. When your body's just releasing adrenaline way too much, it just can't release anymore because it's just happening so often. So like I try to avoid that, avoid all feeling of adrenaline, you know, coming up to a meet. Cause like when that adrenaline rush hits me, I want it to be like a fucking train hitting me. And, no, but it's pretty cool. So try it. Try like watching a video of like somebody fighting or whatever, and put yourself in their shoes, and just like, cause that's what does it for me. What is it? What does it for you, Meg? Cause you said you can do it, like,
yeah,
on
actually
demand.
For me yesterday. So, I wrote this new program for myself after 4 weeks of squatting 155. I bumped it up to 160.
And it was that template that I sent you that you did the.
Yeah, it wasn't like strictly that template that you sent me. I put, because sometimes like I wanted more hypertrophy than strength in some aspects. But. So I was scared to go up in squatting just because of my knees, and I've had problems with my back as well. I just was scared to go up. So finally I decided, you know what, I'll try it. So yesterday I did 3 sets of 5 at 160, and
I tell everybody your body weight.
I don't look
at this. No. I was like,
no, because it's like you could be
no,
like,
no, I don't care. It's like, I just don't really feel like, I'll tell you my weight. It's like 140, 145. I fluctuate, but I really honestly don't think that besides weight classes, I don't think the scale reflects.
Oh, right. 100%. But like about your body. My reason for saying that is because like,
just
if,
to put it in
let's
perspective.
Put, yeah. Like, let's put this in perspective for like, if you were powerlifting,
yeah.
Like what weight class would you be in? So let's look at the weight that you're moving in. Like,
140 to 145, I fluctuate depending on the day and depending on my menstruation cycle and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But so I was squatting at, I was warming up and I knew that I may have had a problem at 160, but I honestly didn't know. So I was like just going in blind and I was trying to hype myself up. And I knew my three boyfriends were at the gym.
Oh, yeah.
Michael was at the gym. And then these two older men who always say hi to me, they've introduced themselves and like given me advice on like how to improve my technique and whatnot. So, you know, like whatever, I'll say hi to them and whatever. So I all three of them were there. So I all knew they were there and I was like warming up for it. And then 160 came and I was like, yeah, I can do this. I can do this. So I like got under the bar. If I have struggles getting the bar off of the squat rack, whether it be like my leg locks up or my lower back is kind of tight or whatever, I kind of get nervous. But I felt good taking the bar off the squat rack. So I set myself up. I went down once, and it was like cutting butter.
And oh, shit.
And I was like, oh, my gosh, what? I got so excited, and I kept going. And then I do a rest period of 1 minute, or a resting for 1 minute, but in between sets. I didn't even want to rest. I wanted to keep going because I was just like, I don't want this adrenaline rush to stop.
Right, right.
Like, I need to finish these last two sets with this adrenaline. And then one of my boyfriends, his name's Jerry, he he was doing pendule rows right next to me on the squat rack.
Yeah.
And I could tell that he was watching me because I kept looking. Okay, this mirror. Is going to sound weird, but I kept looking at myself in the mirror, and then I kept seeing him like glance over. So then that was kind of like, oh, Jerry's watching me. Okay. Jerry's this old guy. He's like, he's huge. And he's really tan.
He's not that big. We're not that tan.
For his
Michael's
age.
Michael's all jealous.
For his age.
Yo, let's
pretty,
get him on the podcast.
Okay, he is. He's weirdly tan.
Like, he tans
he
in
probably
the tan
bro.
Yeah, I knew that.
Because listen, did you see him yesterday? His upper body was more red than his lower body. He wears this shirt. I'm going to try to paint the picture for our listeners here. But he wears this muscle shirt. So picture like a regular t-shirt that's been cut up. So the back of it. It doesn't even have a neckline anymore. Or maybe it does, but it's only around the neck. And then the back comes in and scoops into the middle. And then it comes out into the hips. And then it just rests on the hips.
So that's like a stringer, basically.
Yeah, but
it's like
a
homemade.
It's
a homemade
stringer.
Yeah, it's
a
homemade stringer.
But it's a bad homemade stringer.
Like, you know, I have like a couple stringers from when I was in my like, gotta get as big as possible complex. Yeah. And I have like this Superman stringer that's like really, really thin and like super easy to do a nip slip, but it like hugs the bottom of my lats super nice.
No, whoa. This Jerry's basically naked.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, even if
okay,
shorts.
Okay, yeah. So it's like that basic whities. Like homemade like
yeah.
really loose tank top.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's like borderline, dude, you should go put a shirt on.
Right.
Anyway, so I just use that adrenaline to do 160, so... That's I think I'll stick with 160 for the next
couple weeks.
3 weeks.
So what I wanted to touch on there is you mentioned that when you unrack the bar, like if you don't feel good, that's going to fuck with your head. And so like bar height, when you go to unrack
I'm bent.
Is important.
Yes.
Right. Like you shouldn't be, because I'll see a lot of the times people
go on their tiptoes.
Right. Like go on your tiptoes to get the bar
that's
off.
Bad.
And it's like, you know, this weight is pushing you down and...
And now
you
you're
should,
trying to
right,
step
like
up
you should
with,
be at a point where you can walk it into the rack,
right.
standing at your normal height, and drop it down onto the rack, and not, you know what I mean? You shouldn't be lifting it off the bar,
no.
you know, like on your tiptoes. Yeah. You should be squatting down a tad bit to
I've
get
done
under
it. I've done it in both instances where it's too low and too high, and I found the right height.
Good. That's super important because, like, like you said, like if you take the bar off and it doesn't feel right, it'll fuck with your head. That's why, like when I unrack a heavy weight, which is pretty much anything over like 275 that I'm squatting, if I take it off slowly, if I unrack it slowly, it's gonna fuck with me, right? So like I'll get under it and really like kind of like stand up quickly, and it generally like makes it feel lighter than it really is. So like mentally going into that set, I'm like, fuck yeah, this is gonna be light. You know what I mean? And then, like, if it's generally the appropriate weight that I should be working at, and it makes it a lot easier. It does. I think mentally does make it a hell of a lot easier.
You ever do squats, like, the day after you're working out your traps?
Yes.
Do you know how painful that is?
Yes.
Oh, so painful.
That's all I kept thinking when you guys were talking about squats. I was like, oh, that hurts so bad.
Yeah, fuck these guys and what they're saying.
Well, isn't there, there's a difference between, like, the high... Why is mine so... Oh. There we go. Mine was really far down.
Mike couldn't figure out how to operate his microphone.
Well,
for
I kept
a second.
Moving it. I moved it way too much.
Yeah.
Trying to get comfy. But there's a difference between like the high bar squat and low bar squat.
Yeah. Do you want to explain that?
No. I actually want to know the difference.
Oh, okay.
No.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, that's true. I didn't want to look into it. But I heard the low bar squat, you can lift heavier.
Yeah. So think about it this way. A high bar squat is like basically sitting on your traps, right? the bar cool. sitting on your traps. It's not on your neck bone, but it's on your traps. Okay. I posted a picture on the Executive Fit Instagram page.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've definitely seen
it was a kind
demonstration
of,
or something.
Right. Like there was one picture where it was like totally wrong and the bar was super high and it was on my neck basically, right? It was on like my neck bone. Then the second picture was proper high bar squats, which was like the bars resting on the traps. And then the next picture was proper low bar squats. And it's basically sitting on your below your upper traps, right? So it's kind of going across the top of your back. And you have to have good shoulder mobility to be able to get into a good low bar squat mm-hmm. position. But because the bar is significantly lower on your back, you know, number one, you're going to be bent over at the hip more at the top. You have to be, so that it doesn't slide off of you, right? But the other factor with that is that's bringing the bar closer to your center of gravity, so you're going to be able to squat more in theory, right? Now, you can't just be good at high bar squats, switch to low bar squats because you have good shoulder mobility and automatically squat more. It's going to take it's like switching from conventional deadlift to sumo deadlift. Oof. You know, it's not necessarily a different exercise, but there's a different technique to doing it, okay? So but because that bar is closer to your center of gravity, you will, you know, in essence, you can squat more weight. You know, have you ever done that, like, squat? It's like a machine that wraps around your hips, and then the weight's below you.
Yeah.
And you're on a platform.
Pit shark,
yeah,
right?
Whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called. And you basically squat like that.
What's it, Michael?
Pit shark.
It's called a pit shark.
Pit shark.
So, you can squat. Like, I guarantee you, I can squat.
1,000.
Well, maybe not 1,000, but I can squat significantly more weight using that than a high bar squat because the weight is on my, it's literally, I'm being pulled by my hips. And that's kind of like where your center of gravity is when you're squatting.
Right? How do you like the hack squat machine?
I don't use it.
I love it. Our gym doesn't have it.
The other Max Fitness has it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good tool. Don't get me wrong, but it's not a replacement for squats.
Oh, definitely not.
Agreed.
No.
But I don't use it, and I just don't really see a super big benefit in that for me, for what I'm trying to do with my body.
Actually,
that or the leg press, I don't see a benefit.
I
don't see a benefit in it, honestly.
I do have a question. I'm going to change gears here.
I also have a thing to say after you then.
Okay. I've been thinking about this a lot, and have you ever, I'm sure you've heard of it, but have you ever tried carb loading diet?
Yeah, it's called bulking, bro.
No, actually, what I'm talking about is...
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Explain it, though.
Yeah, for our listeners, so you basically tailor your nutrition, tailor your diet to the type of exercise that your type of body... Gosh, I can't talk. Type of workout that you're doing that day. So, for example, if you're just doing, you know, triceps and shoulders, you're going to have a low carb diet that day.
Pretty much.
But if you're going to do legs one day, you're going to carb the shit load out of your diet because your legs are half of your body.
Mm-hmm.
So you need the carbs, the carbohydrates for your body to break it down and to be able to then build it back up, build your muscle glycogen.
Storages.
Back up. Yeah, I don't know.
Muscle
what I'm
glycogen
about.
Storages. No, so, but yeah, basically that's the concept is, you know, on days that you're not going to train super hard, like if you're just doing arms, you won't eat a shit ton of carbs, you know, and you may even be in a deficit that day.
Yeah.
But like if you're going to go into a heavy deadlift session or a heavy squat session, you know, and you're going to really, your intensity is like really, really there, then yeah, you're going to carb load, you know, like, even that dinner before the day, you know what I mean? Like dinner one day,
before.
The night before, and then the morning of up until that workout. And then depending on the next day, but what comes down with that is your programming and how your program is written. You know, if your program is not properly written, then
I don't want to say
that you're spinning your wheels. But, like, if you think that, like, you can do, like, beast mode even on arm day, like, no. Like, you're not going to exert that much energy training arms. Like, you're simply not, right? They're not that big muscles compared to legs. And so, you know, I mean, programming still needs, it needs to be like half decent at least. You know, but like if you're just doing whatever you're doing in the gym and there's no structure, that's not going to work for you. You need to have some type of program outlined where like, oh, okay, it's leg day. I'm going to load up on carbs
or
the
night
before and the day of.
Right. Or, you know, right. Like a couple of days in advance, you can meal prep and
right.
be able
exactly.
to prepare mentally.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I've done it. And I like it when I'm not, you know, I don't do it now. But I like it for the concept of it kind of gives you a little bit more structure and leeway when it comes to like, oh, I can eat a lot today, or I need to hold back a little bit. And, I need to have a little bit of a feeling of hunger because I'm not going to be training super hard today. So I like it. I think it's a little more advanced. You know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend somebody who doesn't really have control of their diet right away to do it. But it works. It definitely works. And it's definitely a way to go.
I'm sorry, Michael, I know you have something to say. Would you recommend, so for someone who maybe doesn't lift as much as we do, but also has a lot more cardio in their exercise workout regimen, would you recommend doing carb loading during cardio days?
No. I mean, if you're spending one...
someone's lifting and doing cardio.
Yeah, the answer is left yes and no. I mean, it depends on how much cardio you're doing. Like, I never write for any of my clients...
20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah, I never write for any of my clients more than 20 minutes a day. 20 minutes of workout. And if they're in a position where I think it's beneficial for them to do cardio every workout, then they do that every workout, but they don't do more than 20 minutes. And most of it is, like, just moderate intensity. It's not a lot of like super high intensity cardio.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like to focus on more so than cardio is just daily activity and tracking your steps. You know, and if you're hitting 10,000 steps a day, you're doing pretty good, right? And so then we can bump that up from there to the point where, you know, instead of just doing your regular daily activities, you're taking a 15-minute walk in the morning, a 10-minute walk at lunch, and then a 10-minute walk after dinner. To get those steps because you have to.
Or park in the back of the parking lot.
Right, and that's my point, is like changing the way that you live your life so that you get more steps in during the day. And I think that's a better way to track your cardio, essentially, than just doing 20 minutes of cardio, you know, every day.
At the gym.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Or at the park or whatever.
Yeah, but no, I mean, but to answer your question, yes, you could carb load if you're doing cardio, but it still depends on what you're doing after if you're lifting. And if you're just doing cardio that day, you don't really need to carb load because your body's using a different energy system, a different way of creating energy than you are when you're lifting weights. So it's not super essential for you to have all those glycogen storages if you're just going to run moderately for, you know, X amount of time.
Gotcha.
What's up? What do you got, Mike?
Oh, man. You guys went really deep into that. My thing that I had to say was like way back with the squatting.
We're just going all over the place with this episode, so like I'm not worried.
And okay. I also have something.
And I still have a story to tell you guys. It's not even fitness related.
And so. I want to say something about nutrition after Michael says something. All right,
go, Mike.
This is quick. Yeah, so I was scrolling through Instagram, and then I saw some guy doing a different way of squatting. So instead of, like, starting at the top, he, like, lifted up and, like, you know, back up and then go down. He would have the bar already, like, down, and, like, on the safety bars, mm-hmm. and then kind of just, like, get under it in a squat already and kind of just stand up. So I don't know if that's, like an elite way of doing something. Because it was a power lifter that I saw was doing
or
it.
Or just a different way of doing
it. Yeah, like, I don't
so really you're understand. You're changing a certain dynamic of the squat there. So when you do a conventional squat and you take it off the rack and you step back and you go down and you stand up, you're doing the eccentric movement first, mm-hmm. and then you're doing the concentric movement, okay? And that's like a conventional squat. Like from a standing position, you drop down into the squat. That's the eccentric movement. You stand up out of the squat. That's the concentric movement. Okay, the way that he's doing it, he's getting under it, he's doing the concentric movement, and then he's doing the eccentric movement. So in essence, we could say, you know, there's a potential that you could squat more if you practice that way and you get good at that way, because you're not putting your body through an eccentric contraction before you put it through the concentric contraction. You're just getting under it and you're doing the concentric contraction and then the eccentric contraction. It's like a bicep curl. When you do a bicep curl, you start at the bottom, you do the concentric movement first, you curl the weight up, and then you do the eccentric movement, you lower it down. Mm. Imagine if you were to take a barbell off of the rack at chin height and do the eccentric movement and then curl it up. It changes the dynamic of the exercise. Yeah. And in a way that, you know, I don't want to use the term muscle confusion, but it's different. Your body's not used to, you know, most of the time, unless you train that way, your body's not used to doing the concentric movement and then the eccentric movement when it comes to squats. So, I mean, I think it's worth fucking with.
Oh, I definitely try it. I feel like that would help, like, mentally.
You just have to, biggest thing is, like, getting that rack height to the height that you actually that you actually squat down to, because you could put it somewhere like, yeah, I'm in a full depth squat, but if you don't always squat down to that depth, you could be starting lower than you normally do, than you normally stop at, and you may not have strength in that range of motion. True. So, yeah, no, I think that's pretty interesting, and maybe we should try that sometime.
Oh yeah, I definitely want to try.
I think
that.
It's worth trying it.
Anyways, so. Going back to the topic of nutrition, I am taking an elective in my semester this year. It's called Nutrition and Human Activity. And it's a super interesting course. You know, it's obviously like not even a month into the school year, into the semester, but I've already learned a lot. And one thing that I'd really like to touch on this podcast, in a different podcast, because, you know, we didn't prepare it at all, but is to really talk about body image when it comes to weightlifting, both in men and women.
I think we should go into that in this episode.
Well, honestly, I'd like to do more research before I talk about it and be able to give some, you know, tips and tricks to people.
Oh, I'm going to talk about my experience when you're done talking. Yeah.
Sure. But one thing I read in the textbook the other day, and I'm talking about it now because I found it really prevalent in my life, so I wanted to bring it attention to you guys, especially Nate, because you meal prep, but also our listeners, and for those of you that may meal prep as well. One huge issue that comes with meal prepping is consistency. And that's a positive thing, but it's also a negative thing, because with consistency in terms of your diet, you lose the food satisfaction. You lose the happiness that you get, or the enjoyment that you get when you actually eat the food. So let's, for example, say you make chicken, broccoli, and rice for a week. By the end of the week, you're like, holy shit, get this chicken, broccoli, and rice out of my face. You know that it's nutrient dense. You know that it's what your body needs to eat, but you are so sick of eating that kinds of foods, you don't want to look at it.
You know that's called palate fatigue.
Oh, I didn't know there was a word for it.
Yeah, anyway, it's called palate fatigue.
You learn something every day.
Exactly.
Palate fatigue. So, you know, in reading this in my textbook, it really wanted me, granted I didn't do any research about it before coming here and doing the podcast, but honestly I'd really like to talk about it, hear about our listeners if they've had any experience with this and how they've combated you know, meal prepping for the week, meal prepping for the weekend, or you know, for the half of the week or whatever, and how you combat that issue.
So real quick to touch on that, that when I first got into like, let's lift weights and get swole, that was my meal prep. Like chicken breast, white rice, and broccoli.
Oh, same.
And
it was horrible. It was it was horrible.
Yeah. So for a while, I would say for at least 2 months, I would eat that 3 times a day at work, right? Because that's all I knew, right? That's all I knew really about nutrition. Like when I first started, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, when I first started, it was, okay, I'm lifting weights and I need to eat, so I'm going to eat this big bag of Chex Mix while I'm at work, because the whole bag has like 20 grams of protein in it and there's a bunch of carbs in it, and I know I need carbs, so yeah, that's good for me to snack on for the whole day, and then I'll eat dinner after my workout when I go home. No, it doesn't work that way.
The amount of sodium and fat.
Yeah, that too.
And trans fat that's in that bag of Chex Mix.
So after learning a little bit more and understanding that like you need to eat whole foods if you really want to grow the muscles. You need to feed them what they need. It was like, oh, like the most common bodybuilder meal is like chicken breast, white rice, and broccoli. And that's what I was seeing. So I was like, I'm going to meal prep and I'm going to do chicken breast, white rice, and broccoli.
And don't get us wrong. Those are very nutrient-dense foods.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So they're awesome.
Yeah.
We're just sick of eating them.
So for the first week, I didn't even season the chicken. I remember this. I didn't even season the chicken. It was just plain chicken, plain rice, plain broccoli.
Tastes like farts.
Yeah. And, like, I was, like, the first week, I was, like, okay, I need to do something with the chicken, right? So then I'd, like, try, experiment with different seasonings, and, like, I would just change that up. I would just, this week, or these few meals are seasoned like this. These meals I've seasoned on this. This chicken has this seasoning, yada, yada, yada. Sometimes I'd steam the broccoli. Sometimes I'd have it raw. Sometimes I'd buy those rice box mixes where it's, like, Mexican rice, and it's got, like, flavoring in it and whatnot.
I love Mexican rice.
Yeah. And so, you know, after about 2 months of playing around with seasonings of, you know, of the chicken and seasonings of the rice, it just got so fucking old that, like, I was like, fuck chicken breast. I hate it. And that's when I started, like, look into, like, what else can I eat? And then now I'm at the point where I'll make 5 to 8 meals. And I'll have 5 to 8 meals, or, like, I know 5 to 8 meals that, like, I enjoy that, like, fit my macros, or I can tailor to fit my macros. Mm-hmm. And I'll make those meals. I'll plot it out for the entire week. Every meal for the entire week, I'll plot it out on a piece of paper. And then you'll be like, okay, I need 3 meals of this. I need 6 meals of that. I need, you know what I mean? So it's, there's much more variety when it comes to your diet. And then even touching, I want to touch on the body image thing, too, because, you know, a lot of people don't understand or don't believe that, you know, if you're a skinny, scrawny dude, you know, you can have this complex of, I have to be as big as possible. And every time you look in the mirror without a shirt on, you're like, fuck, I'm scrawny. And
muscle, like, dysmorphia.
Yeah, or body dysmorphia. And it's a real thing. And I struggled with it for a long time. And it drove me to the point where I was taking things that I shouldn't be taking.
Yes, we literally just talked about this in my nutrition class today, which is why I wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Not today, but on a different podcast. But it was like, you know, in a lot of body image, not even body image disorders, eating disorders, mm-hmm. it's more common in women than in men.
Yeah.
But in muscle.
But it's still common in men.
Sure. But very in muscle common. Dysmorphia.
Body dysmorphia. Well, I mean, body dysmorphia in general.
Yeah.
You know.
But in that disorder in general,
yeah,
it's more likely that men develop it
mm-hmm.
rather than women. And so I found that interesting.
It's very common in the bodybuilding scene because, you know, bodybuilders, it's a very common stigma and stereotype that bodybuilders feel like they'll never be big enough. They're always chasing the gains. And I think what really drove that for me, what really reinforced that dysmorphia for me, was always seeing myself in the gym with a pump.
Mm-hmm.
I always, whenever I was in the gym, you know, I got a pump, I would see that and be like, I look great.
And then you'd go home.
And then you'd go home, the pump would go away, which is all natural. And you'd be like, oh, fuck, I look small. And it would just reinforce that dysmorphia. So when we first bought the house, I refused to put a mirror in the garage because I was still battling with the dysmorphia then.
Aww.
And so I refused.
I feel like a dick for pressuring you to get a mirror in the garage.
That's okay. So I refused to put a mirror in the garage, and that helped tremendously, not looking in the mirror, not training in front of a mirror. And
I mean, it also helps your form as well.
Yeah. And at that point, I was already into powerlifting, and that was the powerlifting was the first step that helped me to get out of that, like, I need to get bigger complex, right? And, you know, up until then, I had experimented with SARMs. I experimented with Decaball. I experimented with, like, pretty much any fucking mass gainer out there on the market. Like, I was doing everything in my power that I could to just force feed myself. And, you know, I seriously contemplated testosterone replacement therapy. And, like, you know, there's ways around doing it. And I mean, thankfully I never did it, but, you know, it got to the point where I was like, I discovered powerlifting and it was like, oh, okay. Like I'm going to lift heavy and I don't have to look a certain way and I have to be in a certain weight class. And I fell in love with powerlifting. And now, I mean, I still battle with it slightly because, you know, given my shoulder injury, I've noticed some atrophy in my chest because I can't bench. I can't really train chest much at all because, I mean, there's a potential that I might have a torn labrum, not just the tendonitis, but there may be an issue with my labrum, which is, of course, terrible. Not a road I want to go down.
Yeah.
So I've been really focusing on rehabbing the shoulder and strengthening the rotator cuffs and stretching the shoulder, the external rotators and the internal rotators, and just keeping that, just really working on the shoulder and not benching. And I've seen some serious atrophy in my chest. And it's like, I don't think that the dysmorphia is starting to come back, but I need to be careful that, like, I keep reminding myself, like, I'm doing what's good for me, and I'm not, like, giving in to this, like, oh, I'm not big enough thing. Like, this is what I need to do to be healthy and to be able to bench in the future. So if I ever want to grow my chest again, this is what I need to do now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I'm accepting that, and I'm understanding it, and, like, it is what it is. But, like, there was a long while, and it was from the day that I started to develop this body dysmorphia of not feeling big enough, and like it would feel like somebody kicked me in the dick when they would make a scrawny joke. And like it actually like legit hurt my feelings,
especially coming from someone like you who legitimately was the same weight as me, and you were 3 years older than me.
Under your weight. Like there was a point in time where I weighed less than you, and I was I'm 2.5 years older than you. Yeah. And I'm a male, so like and that was also a factor where I learned that it doesn't bother me now. I'm past that.
What did you just say, man?
Yeah, like how about you watch that AMRAP deadlift video of 315 at 150-pound body weight? Like, fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And that's part of the reason why I want to lift so heavy and break a deadlift world record is because it's like, you know, like I can be the fucking strong, scrawny guy. Like, fuck you. I don't have to be fucking swole as fuck. Like, I'm stronger than you, and you weigh more than me. Like, go ahead and make a fucking scrawny joke now, bitch.
Yeah.
Like, I can lift more than you, and I'm smaller than you. You're a fucking bitch. And that's where, like,
calling them out.
That's where I have found, I guess you could say, recourse. What's the word? I found a sanctuary, basically, in that, like, you know, I can get strong and I don't have to look like a fucking 5'7" bodybuilder and be 200 pounds at 5'7". I can be 150 pounds at 5'7" and be strong as hell and be stronger than some guys that are bigger than me. And it's like, I don't give a fuck because I'm stronger than you. I don't care. So, you know, for me to get through that, it took a long time, and I wouldn't even say I'm 100% through it yet. But it took a lot of work on my end. So I'm gonna stop rambling about my fucking issues. And I wanted to tell you guys this in the beginning of the episode, but
Nate wanted to just jump right into it.
Yeah, we just jumped right into it.
Oh, that's good.
But so we at the shop, we regularly have these high school students come in when you go to a tech school, you have to do this thing called a job shadow.
Yeah.
Where you spend a day at a business of the industry that you're currently learning, and you spend the day there, and that's it. And so this kid was there the other day at the shop, and he was a senior, and he was like normally these kids are like shy, but he was like really outgoing and like was very talkative. And I was like, I like this kid. Like, you know, like you can ask him a question and like have a pretty cool, like decent conversation with him. So I was like, I'm gonna fuck with him. Like,
uh-oh.
Because I like him, so I'm going to fuck with him, right? Guy. Right? So I'm setting up this scan on this car, and it's running. And I'm like, hey, bro, can you, you know, since I'm in the middle of scanning this car, so I can't do this right now, so can you take this trash bag and get an exhaust sample and go bring it into Kevin? And Kevin's the general manager. So I'm like, just take this trash bag, fill it up with exhaust, and take the exhaust sample into Kevin. And he's like, yeah, no problem. So, like, he was, like, having trouble, like, getting the trash bag around the exhaust pipe. So, I'm like, here, let me show you how to do it. So, I, like, held the trash bag open and let the exhaust go into it for a second. I, like, close the top of it up, and there's air inside of it. I'm like, here, take it to Kevin. Tell him Nate sent you. Say this is the exhaust sample for whatever car it was. He was like, all right, got it. So he brings the trash bag into Kevin.
This is my moment.
Yeah, he's like, I'm doing great. Right? He brings the trash bag into Kevin, comes back out and gives me a thumbs up. And I'm like, sweet, thanks, bro. And like, still haven't told him at this point that I'm totally fucking with this kid. And then Kevin comes out and he pulls me aside and he's like, can I talk to you for a second? I'm like, yeah. Like
about
what's
this
up?
Exhaust.
No,
example.
Ready? So he looks at me and he goes, you know, this kid has autism, right?
Oh, you're an asshole.
And I'm like, I'm like, no, fuck you, Kevin. I was like, you're mad because I'm fucking with you and I got you. And now you're trying to fuck with me. And he was like, no. He was like, all joking aside, he has autism.
Did he look like he had autism?
No. So it turns out he has Asperger's. Okay.
Oh.
He had Asperger's.
So that's why he's so friendly.
Yeah, exactly. And and then, right?
I'm sorry, that was mean.
No, check it out. So then everybody's like, Nate, you're a fucking douchebag. You're a dick. Like, making fun of the special kid. And I'm like, you know what we learned today? Nate doesn't fucking discriminate. Nate treats everybody fucking equally. Fuck all you motherfuckers. Like,
amen.
And like, amen. If I didn't like you, like, and that's like who I am. Like, if I don't like you, I'm not gonna fuck with you. Like, I'm not gonna try to play a prank on you. I'm not gonna talk to you. I'm just gonna ignore your ass because I don't like you.
Oof.
Like, that's how I am, right? And especially a high schooler who has no knowledge, like very little knowledge of the automotive industry, very little knowledge of like this whole thing, is here because he has to be here. Like, if I like you, I'm gonna fuck with you, and I'm gonna find a way to fuck with you. Like,
that's awesome.
That's just what I do. So it was so funny, and I wanted to ask you guys, did you ever like pull a prank on somebody that like you did it and then you're like, oh, I feel so bad for doing it?
Yes, I've done it. So it's I did this to my cousin Justin. It's pretty funny.
No.
So you hold their fist and you tell them to pull back towards their face as hard as they can to see if they can beat you, and you just let go and they hit themselves in the face.
And they punch themselves in the face.
Yeah, he punched himself really hard to the fact that I thought he broke his nose, and he was like really pissed off at me and left. But it was worth it. It was a fun.
That's awesome.
I don't think that I've ever played a joke like that before.
Do you remember?
I think it's a guy thing.
One year when we were living with mom and we were still in school, and it was April Fool's. It was April Fool's, and I like took Saran wrap and ran it across your guys' door, so that when you open the door, you walk through, you'd hit your face on the Saran wrap.
No, I don't remember
that. Didn't work. And then I said,
oh.
It didn't work.
Yeah, I was like, I would have remembered.
But
that.
Then I lathered your bedroom door with peanut butter on the door handle. Do you remember that?
That's a good one.
And I think I got Sarah because she
reached.
Yeah, she was like, what the heck? I remember that.
I did something similar to that.
And then like taping the, you know how the our old sink had the handle sprayer.
Mm-hmm.
I taped the handle down so you turn on the faucet. We got grandpa so many times with
we'd
that.
We got it right before church one day. We'd like walk downstairs and grandpa would be having breakfast or like doing whatever and be like, oh, grandpa, why is your shirt all wet? He'd be like, yeah, you guys are stupid.
if your sink has like a sprayer that's next to the faucet that you can pull out and
like
squeeze the handle, right, to like rinse off dishes. And all you had to do is squeeze that handle and the water would stop coming out of the faucet and come out of the sprayer. So we did this a bunch of times. We would go downstairs either late
too.
At night or early in the morning and tape that handle down with clear tape.
No, I don't even think you had to tape it. I think the way that the sink worked was if you
could
you had it in? Yeah.
I remember taping it once. Oh. But anyway, we'd lock that handle open, or we'd tape it open so that when as soon as you turn on the faucet, it doesn't come out of the faucet. It comes out of the sprayer, and you just angle the sprayer to just spray at the person who's standing there. And it's like, I remember we got grandpa one morning right before church.
He's like, no,
and he was like, now I gotta go back up and change.
Oh, it's so sad.
Like, wow, like we were dicks.
It takes me like 10 minutes.
I know.
No, then he was younger. He was faster on his feet.
Oh, wow. Five minutes.
Anyway, but with that, thanks for listening to this episode of Drive with Woody Fit with your hosts, Nate Woods,
Megan Woods,
and Michael Stewart.
If you like the show and you think you like what we're doing, leave us a rating and review. I don't know where I was going. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes or on the Executive Fit Facebook page. That's facebook.com/ExecutiveFitLLC. And we'll pick the best reviews from each month. And actually what we're doing now is we're doing a giveaway. So go leave a review and we are going to send you some Woody Fit decals. We're going to send you some Woody Fit coffee mugs. And if you leave a 5-star super funny or awesome review, we'll read, if we read your review on one of the episodes, we'll send you a free t-shirt of your choice from the website. So do that. Share the podcast out on social media. Share it with your friends. Share it with your family members. Share it with your enemies. Just share it out there. Let's get the word out to come and drive with Woody Fit.
Boom.